This is William Del Pilar.
And this is Big John.
And we are here with Points on the Board. Look, people, we had a great show schedule, but we shelved it when we had the opportunity to bring our main man back. And that is Dennis Velasco, NBA analyst. He's been kind enough to be with us for the ending of the regular season, breaking down the playoffs. And usually we have him to start a series, but this is a final one. And I got to be honest, I have found this series extremely exciting.
Right.
What's the term you always use, OP? This is an OP series, I guess. I don't know if I'm even using the word right. But it's an exciting series. Dennis is going to break it down. And for those of you who do not know who Dennis is, Dennis Velasco is a former editor-in-chief of Nerd Fantasy Sports. He's contributed fantasy basketball content to Sports Illustrated and The Score, and regular NBA content to Yahoo, Slam, SB Nation's Nets Daily, ESPN's Old True Hoop Network, and many other hoop destinations on the internet. He's the founder of Hardwood and Hollywood, which was a Fox Sports partner, and he's currently a Complex BuzzFeed publishing partner. Everybody, let's welcome Dennis. And Dennis, thank you for coming back. How are you?
Of course. I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
I'm hanging in there. Hey, look, we got a great show. You're going to break down the finals. We're going to talk Warriors, Celtics, and I want to get a little bit into the MVP because that's a big deal going into this series, as well as the ratings, which are a surprise hit to conservatives, but not to conservatives and libertarians like John and I, who actually know the sport and the issues. So, Big John, I'm going to hand it off to you, and let's get going. Let's talk some Warriors basketball here and what they're doing.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've been enjoying this series. Dennis and I will end up texting throughout the games the past couple of nights. This has been great. I have been impressed by two things. One is that the Warriors, especially in games in Game 5, Dennis, seems like they're starting to think they can win without Steph Curry having to carry them on their back. That's the first thing I've been impressed by. And then the second thing, their defense and their rebounding has gotten better as the series has gone on. I don't know. I like what I'm seeing from them. They're switching. They're still moving. They settle for too many threes, if you ask me. But, Dennis, what do you think?
Well, I don't know if it's really settling for too many threes because, you know, they're a good three-point shooting team. I think, if anything, in Game 5, Steph Curry was – forcing shots because he's taking three-pointers from almost half court, like one step beyond half court. And, yes, he's great, and he can make those, but they just didn't seem in rhythm. You know
did you see the same thing I did, Dennis, when he passed up on a 2-1 break? He didn't drive the hole when he got the dish, and he just backed up behind the three. Then he double-clutched. Then he let it fly.
Yeah.
You know I almost kicked a hole in my TV, the DVD.
Well, because you know good fundamental basketball, but this is Steph Curry, and you can't really argue against Steph Curry. You can't really critique him if he wants to take that shot because he's earned it.
Oh, you know really? I mean? You're coaching your kids to pull up at the three like that on a break, on a fast break?
Well, are they shooting like Steph Curry? Are they making like Steph Curry?
If I'm 0-for-8 at that point, if I'm 0-for-8 beyond the arc at that point,
no,
I'm driving the hoop.
If it's Steph Curry, you have a green light automatically. Yeah, if you go 0-for-16, that one that you hit can be the game changer.
I know, but if you're up and you're trying to keep the Celtics from going on another run, right? Because in Game 5, that third quarter, oh my goodness, what were they, 14-15? They erased the 12-point deficit heading into the third, coming out of halftime. Oh, my goodness, Dennis. I thought the Celtics were unconscious from three.
Yeah, no, and that was after going 0-for.
Yeah,
in the first
you're right.
Half. But, I mean, here's the thing. They were just making their shots. Sometimes there's just nothing you can do when that happens. What they had, like nine? I don't even know how many in a row.
They had something like 9 or 10 in a row, and they missed one, got the rebound, and then hit the three. So I don't even count that as a dry streak because it was basically they didn't even get back to the – they didn't back up on defense. They just got the rebound, kicked it out, boom, hit the three, swish. So it was impressive. Even Smart was hitting them. Robert Williams hit one. But anyway, so with the Warriors though, did you get the feeling though? Let me ask you this question. Draymond Green, are they better with him on the court or off the court? Are they a better team with him on the court? I think he's been struggling, man.
I think generally speaking, right now.
What was that? Go ahead.
Generally speaking, I think they're better with Draymond Green on the court just because, all right, so he's not scoring, but that's not really why you want him on there anyway. You know, he's still making good passes. You know, obviously, his defense, when he doesn't try to double out of the post and, you know, get out of position, his defense is very solid. You know, and he's just like one of those guys, he's like a glue guy, where just because I know he's behind me or in front of me or next to me, I'm going to probably play a little bit better. But, you know, you have game situations where, you know, before game five, yeah, you're probably better off without him. But at the end of the day, you want him on there. And, you know, just getting back to what you had mentioned earlier with the rebounding and the defense, I think the biggest game changer was when Andrew Wiggins said, I'm going to focus on rebounding.
There you go.
Because once he started doing that, it's been different.
Well, him and Looney, right? Both of them have hit the board hard.
Well, no, Looney, you expect that from.
Right. But I mean, he's still
be tall.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. Now, William, I know you dug up some numbers for us on some of the secondary players, right? Like Klay Thompson and Andrew Wiggins coming on lately. What are some of those numbers you have for us?
I just got a question slash comment for Dennis. Dennis, so real quick, Andre is I kind of viewed him as his role is more of a Dennis Rodman role the last couple games, especially with Wiggins playing so good on both sides. And the fact that he scored 8 points the other night, I thought that was like a bonus because he was playing so well defensively. They didn't need him on offense. So I mean, that's kind of how I viewed him. Is his role right now is the Dennis Rodman role. Go up there, play strong defense, and help keep his team afloat. Meaning, as you said, with him on the court, they know he's there and they know what he brings to the table, and he's not like a lesser piece. Am I looking at it wrong? Is he expecting to do – is he supposed to do more offensively?
Only in terms of passing. You know, he's been a defensive player of the year, but the thing that really stands out about Draymond, if you look at his numbers, yeah, maybe he scores or averages 9 points, 9 rebounds, but he also averages like 6 assists. You know what I mean? So that's the difference maker, because when you're getting those assist numbers from, you know, generally speaking, a big like Draymond Green, that's just a big bonus. You know, he's able to actually grab the rebound and dribble down the floor and, you know, facilitate the offense. So, you know, that's why you have Draymond Green there. That's why he's a special talent. And, you know, don't be surprised if he makes the Hall of Fame, you know, especially with all the chips that he has. And his numbers, you would never think he'd make the Hall of Fame, but he's a champion.
But that
Oh, yeah, right. It's like Dennis Rodman. People hate him, but the guy was a champion. And he was always brought in for a specific role and always excelled at that, except wearing the wedding dress. But that's another story. Okay.
But I'm sorry. I was going to ask Dennis something. Do you think the Warriors, to some extent, this series was salvaged when Kerr kind of grabbed his cojones there for a while and sat Draymond, right, and brought in Gary Payton? He brought in Poole for a little bit, but basically was bringing in Payton for Draymond in game four. And, yes, that was the Seth Curry show, no doubt, in terms of the 40-plus points, right? But – do you think the series may – like if the Warriors end up winning the series, do you think the series turned on that decision? Because it took a lot to sit Draymond in the second half of that game.
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely a turning point. And Steve Kerr is like one of the best coaches of all time for a reason. And, you know, just like you let Steph Curry shoot threes whenever he wants, you let Kerr coach. You know, if that's his decision to sit Draymond – and Draymond, he said he was pissed, but he understood it. and he's not complaining about it, which he didn't, you know. And then he came back on, you know, game five. You know, he started his offense early. I think he scored almost all his points just in the first quarter. You know, so, you know, Kerr, he's a great coach. Gary Payton, you needed him for what? Exactly what Draymond brings, defense.
Right.
But Payton can also, you know, take you to the hole.
Right.
And score some points. You know, so that's the difference. I'm really surprised that they haven't played Jonathan Kuminga as much, because a lot of, like, basketball nerds, you know, like me and analytics guys and whatnot, where's Kuminga? You know what I mean?
Right.
Because he's younger, he can play defense, but just offensively, he's not there yet. But if you, you know, if you have a fast break opportunity, he's definitely going to finish. But,
right.
You know, it's a little surprising. But, again, Kerr can do whatever he wants because he's earned that right.
You're not second-guessing him.
No, no.
So, Dennis, Klay Thompson, I learned he's also known as Game 6 Thompson. So, high expectations, I imagine, for coming up. He's averaged 21.3 points and has a 41.2% three-point range over the last three games. To me, that those are phenomenal numbers to me, a layman. I'm not sure what they mean to you in this style of play, and I like to hear that. But I guess my question is, how can he keep this up? And how important has his play been in Golden State taking not just a 3-2 lead, but they've been commanding the last two games over the Celtics? How much of that can be attributed to Thompson, and do you see him living up to his Game 6 reputation?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Klay Thompson is just going to be Klay Thompson. You know, you only mention him in any sort of, like, bad way is if he has a bad game, right? Actually, you don't really mention Klay Thompson even if he has a good game, because you expect it out of Klay Thompson. Yeah, it's Steph Curry's team, but Klay Thompson, you look at the numbers, he's been consistent. Like, there's no, you know, like, where's Klay Thompson, right? He's just there. He's just getting his 20. He's hitting, like, you know, 6 3-pointers. I mean, he's scoring, I think he scored something like 40-something points, and he dribbled once. Just, like, catch and shoot. Yeah.
Wow. Klay
Thompson is the real deal. And what people don't really realize, he's also been an all-defensive player, you know? He's one of the best players, defensive players out there. Like, on the perimeter, he's great. You know, you watch him guard anybody. He challenges every shot, you know? But he just does what he does. As far as, like, Game 6, do I expect anything, like, spectacular? I mean, I expect 27 points, but he can go off at any point as well, because he's done that before.
Gotcha. Yeah, I don't look at somebody who's just a defensive guy who can shoot 41% from the three and average 20-plus points a game. Every once in a while, those defensive guys will have that solid offensive output, then they disappear, but not Mr. Thompson. What about Andrew Wiggins? Before and throughout all our discussions in a Golden State series, I think we brought his name up once, yet he's been the man this series. He's shown the ability to play both ends of the floor, obviously for the layman, being able to play offense and defense. And he's averaging 18.4 points against the Celtics, including 29 rebounds he's had. Talk to us a little bit about Wiggins and who he is and how is what we're seeing really the real deal from him in terms of who he is. Isn't he a high draft pick too? Wasn't he like a number? Wasn't he a very high draft
pick? He was number one pick. Pick. Yeah, coming out of Canada, they were saying that he was going to be the next LeBron James, which, you know, they used to do that with a lot of players saying, oh, they're the next Michael Jordan, right?
Right.
None of those players that have been called that have ever lived up to being the next whatever, and it'll never happen. You know, there's only one Michael Jordan, there's only one LeBron James. But Andrew Wiggins, like, his whole NBA career, because he's had that, you know, those expectations, you never quite feel like, oh, my God, yeah, he's a good player, because he's not doing, you know, 28, 10, and 10, you know, like LeBron would. But he's a steady player, and I think he's never really had an opportunity to find a rhythm with any team. And he's never really played for any good team with a good coach. You know, coming to the Warriors has been a blessing for that guy. I mean, he was an all-star this year. You know what I mean? Yeah, I mean, is it a surprise? Maybe. But, you know, with the Warriors, there's been a precedent with the player seemingly coming out of nowhere, because several years ago, Andre Iguodala won the Finals MVP, not Steph Curry, who was ridiculous during that regular season, you know? I think, you know, Andrew Wiggins, you know, he's had that slow burn into playing as well as he has been, you know, of late.
That's a good term. Slow burn. It's and you're right. He's an overall number one pick, high expectations. But I don't think anybody saw what he's doing this series coming from him. I mean, I hadn't seen much mention of it and from the analysts or the experts, so I was a little surprised. But that said, you know, right team, right fit. You know, so Curry had his big 43-point performance in game four, but he was shut down in game five. Now, there's no doubt the Celtics said, we're going to shut Curry down and the rest of you guys have to beat us. And that's kind of what happened. But that said, is Curry at an age where after a big 43-point performance, maybe his age and knees are creeping up on him and that kind of held him in check a little bit in game five? I'm just curious as to your take in terms of not necessary this series per se with Curry, but where he's at in his career based off that game there.
Well, you know, I started cracking up when I was watching the game because the Celtics were face guarding him. So basically, when a team face guards one player, it's just hilarious because it's sort of like, man, you were so scared of this guy scoring. You know what I mean? Because when you face guard someone, you don't even know what's going on behind you. You don't know where the ball is. You don't know where the pick's coming. You don't know anything. You just don't want this guy to catch the ball. And, yes, that makes a lot of sense with Steph Curry. But I just thought it was funny because I was, like, almost grade school sort of thing. Like, you know what I mean? But as far as, like, where he is, I mean, the Boston Celtics, they're, like, the best defense in the NBA. Like, you can't say, you know, Curry, he stinks. He's playing the best defense, and they're face guarding him. They're double teaming him, triple teaming him. And you got to give him credit. You know, other than, you know, when he got itchy in the second quarter and he's taking those crazy three pointers, which he normally hits, and he rimmed them. It's not like he totally missed. You know, he's playing within the game. You know, he wasn't trying to force anything. He's like, oh, they're triple teaming me. I better pass the ball. You know what I mean? So he wasn't really forcing. Another, you know, 40-plus point performance. He was just doing whatever it took to win. And, you know, you got to give him a lot of credit because he's, like, one of the most humble players out there. If it was, like, Michael Jordan's on another level, but let's say it's Michael Jordan. There's no way he's doing it. Michael Jordan's taking the rack the whole time. He's taking up shots. Kobe, that's a good example. Kobe's just going to shoot. You know what I mean? He's only passing if he has to. You know, whereas Steph is, like, you know what the smart play is to pass, I'm passing. You know what I mean?
Right.
So,
right.
You know, if that speaks to his determination or not, it doesn't matter. He's winning basketball because they won a game, and he's a champion. So,
but it wasn't just the defense, right? I mean, to me, in game as amazing as Curry was in game four, it seemed to me in game five there was something off about him. I don't know if it was like the leg injury, like, draining him a little more from game three. Now, I was amazed that he got what he got accomplished in game four, given that he was coming off that injury.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes those injuries, like, the next game, the adrenaline is going, and you hit your first couple of shots, and the next thing you know, all of a sudden that leg ain't throbbing that much, right? But now you got an extra day or two to think about it. It's getting a little worse. You're a little bit older, to William's point. Well, now maybe it's set in a little more because I didn't think he was moving as crisp as, you know, and when he spotted up for his threes, I don't know, he seemed like he was double clutching sometimes. It looked like he wasn't as smooth going up into his release. I don't know, Dennis. It seemed to me like, yes, I agree with you. The Celtics said anyone can beat us except for Steph Curry in game five, right? So that was obvious, but to me, I don't know. You tell me, man. You're the coach. You tell me. Did it seem to you that he was off physically a little bit from his normal game?
It was. But, you know, you also got to remember, like, you put a lot of pressure on him. You know, you're counting on him, like, so much. And, you know, yeah, he's a pro. Yes, he's a champion. Yes, he's one of the best players at his position ever. But, you know, again, like you said, to Wayne's point, maybe he's getting a little older. You know, you don't recover from injuries as quickly. But he's also, like, one of the most conditioned players, you know, in the league. So I guess I overthought it, or didn't even think about it, rather, because he is one of the better conditioned players in the league. But, yeah, like, maybe, you know, the injury did affect him last night, you know.
I don't know. I'm on the opposite end of Big John, because I've seen it in the NFL. Somebody's injury won't be as serious, and they'll mess with that injury report. And it's kind of like Michael Jordan and the flu. That flu's going to put you down, and then he comes out and plays, and he shows no effects of anything, you know. And I'm like, sometimes they get played up, and that. But I'm not sure about last night. But I agree with you, Dennis. I think what makes Curry so different from LeBron and Kobe is he is a selfless player, the most humble player. And I think that's a reason why they have so many championships, and they're such a well-coached team. Like I said, I'm not a Kerr fan, but the guy's an incredible coach. Not only are they well-coached, but they completely understand their roles. They understand how they fit, their chemistry with one another. And what I'm seeing is, because I haven't watched every game from entirety to end, but when I watch it, I see a consummate Golden State Warriors team in every facet. And the teams they play, it's like somebody has to step up, or somebody has to be on top of their game, or this or that. It's as long as the Pistons are moving for the Warriors, it doesn't matter if one Piston's a little off, because there's the four others that are going to carry it, where the Celtics don't have that. And that's kind of what I see with Curry. But that said, I'm going to push back a little bit. Michael Jordan was a team player. He was a selfish player at times, but we saw him in key games give the ball up, because I think that was a product of the Bulls being in the same spot where the Warriors were at. And Jordan knew that his players inside and out, who he could trust, who he could irk, the crank up, that, you know, things like that. Now, Kobe was just a shooter, and LeBron, well, LeBron's LeBron.
hey, look, one of the most famous players that Michael Jordan gave up the ball to was Dennis
Kerr.
Steve Kerr. Yeah, Steve Kerr. Yeah. Take that final shot, right?
To piss off Scottie Pippen.
but here's the thing. This was Michael Jordan's formula, you know, especially when he became a superstar. In the beginning of the game, I'm going to pass the ball. But after that, second half, I'm shooting everything. You know what I mean? And as far as Kobe goes, what was it? Oh, yeah. So Shaq had this great story. I don't know if I've told this to you guys before about how, you know, in practice, you know, Kobe, he was just like shooting everything. And they were complaining to Shaq. And Shaq was like, oh, you know what? Let me go talk to Kobe. So he talked to Kobe. He said, Kobe, you know, you're taking all these shots. You're being, you know, selfish. You need to pass the ball. You know, there's no I in team.
Yeah.
And then he goes,
I've heard this, yeah.
Yeah. But there's an M-E in that.
Well, you know what's also funny was, did you ever see that basketball movie, which is a stupid movie, but I still enjoy watching it, Uncle Drew?
Oh, I love that movie. Right. I love Kyrie Irving.
It's hilarious. It's like these 70-year-old guys, supposedly, who get back to the Rucker in New York for the tournament, and they end up winning, spoiler alert, right? But they're all in their 70s. But the guys in their 70s are actually Shaq, Kyrie Irving, Reggie Miller, and Chris Webber, right? And they're playing old men, right?
Lisa Leslie, too.
Yeah, no, yeah, but they had him in makeup. So Kyrie Irving is Uncle Drew, and he's supposed to be 70 in this, right? But anyway, Dennis, did you notice that in one of those scenes at the Rucker where they're playing, you know, the street ball, at one point Kyrie Irving's character, Uncle Drew, is shooting all the time, and he's nailing threes and all that, and Shaq is just looking at him going, come on, Kobe, pass the ball. Come on, Kobe. Come on, Kobe. Like, so you can even see it in the movie, right? Like he still says, come on, Kobe. Come on, Kobe. I thought that was a nice inside joke, the way they worked it into the script, and I got a good chuckle out of that when I said, but you're right. That's one of my favorite stupid movies. It's like Soul Plane. It is so stupid. It is funny.
Soul Plane. you're right, John. There's movies like Adam Sandler. I mean, he's got a great hoops movie out right now, so a little plug for that. But his first 5, 6 movies. Oh, yeah. They were like stupid movies, but you just laugh.
The Water Boy. The Water Boy. What's better than the Water Boy?
So there is something said for having that kind of talent. When you look at the movie, you're not ashamed to tell people you watch it, but it's not something you're going to shout to the world. And but you end up having a good time.
Exactly.
So getting back to this series, though, Dennis, moving on to the Celtics, we've covered the Warriors and some of the aspects of them. To me, the Celtics look like I don't want to say a beaten team. They don't look like a beaten team, but they look outmatched and outplayed right now and outcoached. And it just looks like the Warriors are on another level, talent-wise and chemistry-wise and coaching-wise. They just check off every box. However, the Celtics did come back from a 3-2 deficit against Milwaukee. They trailed the Heat 2-1 before staging their comeback. Should we count them out? Because I'm seeing a lot of articles, hearing a lot of experts, a lot of analysts who are expecting, and I got to say, I don't fall into the camp, but I can't argue it, that believe this series is going to be over in 6 games, including Big John, I think, right?
Oh, I had been in 6 games before the series started, yeah.
Should we be writing the Celtics off yet, or are they effectively done?
No, you can't write them off. I mean, they have a great coach. I know he's a rookie coach, but, you know, he's from the Greg Popovich, St. Antonio Spurs tree. You know, you may Udoka. He's a great coach. The problem, and I've said this before, the problem is their superstars are inconsistent. Jason Tatum has been inconsistent. Jaylen Brown has been inconsistent. You know, if they ever got it together, you know, together, like, at the same time, they'd be really unbeatable because of their role players, you know, Al Horford, Robert Williams, Marcus Smart. But I think Andrew Wiggins is holding Tatum to like 37% shooting. You know what I mean?
And causing turnovers. Tatum's been a turnover machine this series. I mean, didn't he set the record for turnovers in a 5-game series so far? First 5 games, he's set the record.
Yeah, 36.7%, Dennis, good call there in terms of his shooting percent. And John, he's averaging 3.6 turnovers per game
now.
Which kind of brings me up to him because what did the Celtics need to do to stop Wiggins in order to get Jason Tatum back on track? Because Wiggins is pretty much locking them down, and you just alluded to that. So what did the Celtics need to do to get Tatum back on track? Because if they get Tatum back on track, I'm assuming they have a legit shot to win that game, to win game 6.
Yeah, I mean, they need to have him shoot easy shots. You look at a lot of his shots, like everything's contested. Everything's like really difficult. Like he has to, you know, dribble and get separation from the defender almost every single time. Maybe some, you know, run some pick and roll. Look, you may Udoka, he's an NBA coach. I'm just a dumb, like, you know, youth coach. So, you know, who am I to say? But, you know, maybe set some screens, like even double screens. You know, let Jason Tatum, like, either take it to the hole or take it, you know, more open shots. You know, that's a big problem. You know, but even still, Jason Tatum, he's been missing, you know, easy layups also. You know what I mean? So it's just tough. But, again, inconsistent. But he's 23 years old? You know, he's going to, like, fall into it. I saw someone say, Jason Tatum's in his prime. Why isn't he stepping up? He's not in his prime. His prime is like 5 years away, which is scary. You know what I mean? This is just growing pains for Jason Tatum. I think, you know, and I do believe he will be like one of the, you know, best players. I'm talking like, you know, easily, you know, top 10, probably top 7 in the league, you know, within a year or two. You know what I mean?
I also think that a lot of us are sleeping on Brown as part of that equation. I mean, I know Tatum's the star on that team, no doubt, but it's 1A, 1B with him and Brown, man. I'm surprised that we don't, A, hear more about Brown and expecting him to step up a little bit, and B, maybe try running some plays for Brown more often to get them to think about Brown so then Tatum gets freed up, right? Because I think when they hit that, like, listen, the one thing that I think is scary about these Celtics, it seems sometimes that they go on these runs of shooting threes. I've seen it now 3 times in this series where they've wiped out double-digit leads in one quarter just by every time they go down the court, it's not even a thought. They pull up to the arc, boom, whoever's open. I've seen Smart hit threes. I've seen Tatum, obviously. Brown has hit threes. Robert Williams has hit threes. Even some kid, what was his name? I don't know, some white guy came on for a couple of minutes. And he hit a couple of – Pritchard, yeah, Pritchard. Yeah, and he hit a couple of threes.
All the time, though.
Yeah.
I think that's a fan in the halftime show you're talking about.
Might have been one of the guys coming down on the Garden. But, listen, my point is they're scary because if they hit that run twice a game – so far they've been hitting it once a game. But if they hit that run twice a game, they get very scary because then you're left trading threes with them, you know, and that might be a bad proposition for the Warriors in the sense that, you know, the pressure's back on the Warriors now, you know what I mean? So I don't know, Dennis, do you think they should work beyond the arc, or do you think part of their game has to be, especially since they're grinders, is drive to the hole, punish them on off. You're punishing the Warriors on defense, right? You're a young team. You're punishing them on defense. Should you be punishing them on offense? Most people don't think of it that way, but you can punish a team on offense, right? Go to the hoop hard, make them take charges, you know, like make them defend, make them run with you, get some personal fouls on those guys, get Curry in foul trouble, right? Get him to get in foul trouble. Like, so do you like the plan, or do you think you said you're not an NBA coach, neither am I. But should they be playing a more physical brand of offense, or should they be relying on those hot streaks of threes, baby? We're going to sit at the arc and just launch, you know? Like, I don't know which way to go with that.
Yeah, they got to play smart. You know, if you look at, you know,
smart as intelligent, not the player. Right,
right, exactly. But, like, if you watch the games, the Warriors are smaller than the Celtics. You see a lot of times Jason Tatum, you know, being defended by Steph Curry also. Yep. You see Robert Williams, a big, being guarded by Payton. You know, he's like a foot tall. You know what I mean? They need to take advantage of that, you know. And it doesn't even have to be a post-up play. It could just be like a split action pick and roll. Just have the guy roll down because the guy that's going to help is going to be smaller than that guy. You know, they need to take advantage of the height. They're not doing that enough. You know, just watch the game. You'll see, like, almost every single time down, if it's not a fast break, the big is going to be towering over whoever is defending him. You know, the only player who can match, like, height and length is Kevon Looney, you know. And, you know, he was in foul trouble yesterday, and I thought the Warriors, oh, it's over. There's just no way, you know, that the Warriors are going to be able to stop the Celtics big, but obviously they did.
Yeah.
So they need to play smart. You know, if the three's open, take the three. You know, I'm not saying don't take the three because obviously, you know, they're a good shooting team. But don't settle for the three. You know what I mean?
Right.
If you can pass it down, go for it.
You know, going back to what you said in terms of Tatum missing layups and John saying getting Brown more involved, to add to the caveat, you're like, don't settle for the three, but it seems like they've been settling for the three because the Warriors' defense has been so solid. You mentioned that he's missing layups and his off play, he's only 23. Just on the surface of things, that tells me that the Warriors aren't literally affecting him physically, but they may have gotten into his head. And if that's true, then game six is over at JSW. But that said, how would you get a player like Jason Tatum his mental game back? Because again, the key is when you start missing those easy shots, it's a red flag. He's off in the head right now. They've rattled him. They got to him. Let's just for sake right now assume that's happened. What needs to happen to Jason Tatum? What does the head coach need to do? Or head coach? What does the coach need to do? His players. What needs to happen to get him back on track offensively? Because they cannot. They've shown they cannot. They're great at those 3-point streaks, but it hasn't paid off the last two games. It's just they've been overpowered.
Yeah. No. Jason Tatum is doing what every young player in basketball does now. And, you know, as far as changing that mentality, you're not going to be able to do that, you know, in the next game for Jason Tatum. But the thing that every young player, and I see it every single time, when they take it to the hole and they miss a layup, I got fouled. What's my foul? Look, no, seriously.
Every young guy.
You're right.
Yeah. Watch Jason Tatum. If you can roll back the tape, if you have access to, like, if you DVR'd any of the games, Watch Jason Tatum. When he misses the layup, and I'm not saying they're easy layups, y'all can test it, but when he misses the layup, he always looks at the ref. And he's stuck in that position like this, and he's not getting back on defense.
Right, right.
And that's getting to him mentally. You know, that's where it's a mindset thing in that, like, I got fouled. Like, that's why, like, when I coach all the young guys, I always tell them, listen, it doesn't matter if you get fouled. Play through the contact. Just play. Because there's not one instance where I saw a ref go,
right.
You know what? You were fouled. Let me change my call. That never happens.
Right.
Just play through contact. Don't expect anything. If you get fouled and they don't call it, play defense.
And you know what, Dennis? That's a great point because I saw the same sort of inexperience or like young guy sort of mentality out of Marcus Smart too, right? Like he got caught up in that, like where they hit him with the technical. Then he ended up fouling. Was it Peyton? No, it was Pool.
Yeah,
he Pool. Ended up, or yeah, slapping him in the face, and yeah, there was.
Yeah,
a
but
flop.
He did it. Pool fucking.
He flopped. I got you. He flopped.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. So like, but I think that's where a veteran team gets a young mm-hmm. inexperienced team. To get out of their game, right? They're looking for the call, right? They're not going to get it, but they're looking for the call, and a guy flops and gets a foul. Now you're yelling at the ref, and you get teed up, right? So I think those are old veteran tricks, right? Like when I played, I couldn't keep up with anybody on the court, right? So my thing was in the paint, I'd step on people's big toes, you know, I'd tug on their shorts a little bit because it would drive them nuts, right? I mean, those are veteran tricks, right?
Yeah. Okay.
And let's be honest, refs give vets calls. They don't give them to rookies for the most part, right? So if there's any doubt in a ref's mind, he's going to give the veteran the benefit of the call.
Unless it's Tim Donnelly.
Well, yeah.
For those who don't know, Tim Donnelly's the ref that was booted for, what was he, gambling or playing the gambling?
Yeah, yeah.
He will not give the man the car. He will give the car that results in his best bookie. You know? Well, the final question regarding the Celtics, and they gave up 18 turnovers in game 5. Their offense obviously looks like a mismatch against the Warriors' defense. Just 1 to 3 points that are the biggest points that you haven't seen them doing that they must get back to or start doing if they haven't to overcome that Warriors defense and to pull out a win tomorrow night.
Yeah, well, I think they mentioned it on the broadcast yesterday where the magic number for the Celtics is 16. If they get 16 or more turnovers, they lose.
Right.
If they get less than that, they win. So protecting the ball obviously is a big deal, and the reason why is because how many times do you want to give Steph Curry, like, an extra possession? You know what I mean? You don't want to.
That was 18. 18 extra possessions they got there. I'm not sure how many points. I should have looked it up. Sorry, fellas. I should have looked up how many points those 18 turnovers became. But 18, I just heard 18. I was like, oh, my God. Even as a non-basketball aficionado, I was stunned at that. So moving on, though, Big John. Speaking of 18 turnovers, that's the over, 16 being the over-under there. Talk to us a little bit about some prop bets, a little gambling tips.
Oh, yeah.
People who don't want to lose money.
Oh, yeah. Listen, if you've been following us on Twitter, at Sports Grumbling with no S at the end on Twitter, I'll let you guys guess. What's my safest NBA bet of the year so far?
I know.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yes. So not even.
Dennis.
Golden State Warriors always win the third quarter.
There you go. You always take Golden State in the third quarter. Ironically enough, the only I had a streak of like 10 in a row on that. Game 5 was the first game in a long time where the Warriors lost the third quarter. So I've made a ton on taking Golden State to win the third quarter. I've won a couple, especially this final series, with taking the Celtics in the first half. They tend to come out hotter and clamp down on the Warriors. And also the Celtics in the fourth, again, except for game 5, which was a role reversal, they tend to win the fourth quarter. Now, the last episode we had Dennis on, I said I'm putting a futures bet on Golden State to win in six. That was the prediction. Dennis shared the prediction. I actually went and put some money on that. That went out at 60-1, at 6-1, plus 600. So I'm still in play for that. But now that the game has gone, now that the series has gone five, right? Now what I'm doing is I'm putting my hedge bets in, right? And this is what smart gamblers do. You don't stick with just one. So, for example, after Golden State won game five, I went out and grabbed and put some money on the Celtics to win at plus 350, right? So now I'm covered because I had the Warriors in six. That gave me plus 600. I got money on Golden State to win the series in any number of games after they lost game one. So basically I got even money. I got great odds because they lost the first game of the series. So I got Golden State. So if Golden State wins in six or seven, I'm golden. But if Boston pulls it out in seven games, which is the only way they can win now, I have my hedge bet because I got that in at plus 350. So when you stack these bets, your total wins comes down, but you can't lose. So right now I'm in the good position of I can't lose on the series. I'm in the position where I'm going to win some money. I'll win the most money if the Warriors go win in six. But no matter how the series turns out, I'm out ahead. The other two bets I got, the first one I think I told you last show, I put some money on Klay Thompson to win MVP because I got plus 900 on that. So that's 9-1 for people who aren't familiar with the odds. But texting Dennis last night in the middle of the game, he said, you know, John, man, if you could get good odds on Andrew Wiggins, go put some money on Andrew Wiggins, man. I got a feeling this guy's going to hit a hot streak and all that. So you know what? He was right. As soon as the game ended, I went out. I put a small amount of money on Andrew Wiggins because I got plus 1,600 on him. So Wiggins to win the MVP is paying off 16-1. So even if you put 10 bucks on it, you get back 160, right?
Wow. So, that kind of leads me, John, though, to the final question on MVP, because that's who I had in the back of my head. I don't have much invested in this. I'm a casual viewer. But that's what I was noticing. I was like, okay, we're not just talking a game or two. We're talking the entire series. Andrew Wiggins has been playing pretty well. So my question was, who is in the lead for this right now? Or does it matter if GSW wins? Is Curry going to get it? Well, was my question. But after hearing the conversation today, looking at the Wiggins numbers, my assumption was still they're going to give it to Curry. But based on Wiggins' play, Dennis, do you think he has a legitimate shot to win this? I guess what I'm asking is, if let's say they close it out in game six and he has another game like he has had in the series, maybe not superstar numbers, but another outing and it impacts the game, is this now Wiggins' MVP to lose, or does Curry still have to track by being the sports writer's favorite?
No, so this is what I told John. If the series goes seven games, Andrew Wiggins can win Finals MVP. At this point, I still think it's Curry's, you know, MVP to lose. And if the Warriors, you know, win on Friday, and Curry doesn't have a horrendous game, I mean, as long as he scores like even just 18 points, right, he'll win the Finals MVP. But if he goes seven, because here's the thing with Wiggins, what's going to be consistent with him is his defense on Tatum and his rebounding. And both of those things have been, you know, spectacular and very significant, you know, for the Warriors. So if he does it again in game six, you know, forget about the points. He doesn't need to score 23, 26, whatever points, right? If he can, have Jason Tatum not shoot well and still get all those rebounds, you know, and the Warriors don't lose by much, then it's like, okay, you know, it's kind of like even now almost with Curry and Wiggins, right? Because Wiggins is showing out overall better than Curry. And then in game seven, if he scores 20 points, and if he has a double-double, right? I think Wiggins will win it. Just like
that was going to be my question. That was going to be my question, Dennis. Whether it goes, if now let's assume the Warriors end up winning, right? That's the big caveat here. If the Warriors win, I don't care if it's six or seven, Wiggins gets his double-double the rest of the way, I think he's got MVP. Unless Steph goes for 40-plus or 35-plus, right, in each game. I think if Wiggins does 16 and 10, 18 and 10, in whatever's left in the series, I think the inclination, because of the defense and because it means he shut Tatum down. If Golden State wins, it means Tatum's been shut down. They can't win unless Tatum goes off, right? So I think you put the two together and a double-double the rest of the way, a good double-double, like I said, 16-10, 18-10. You talked me into Wiggins being MVP. I'll be honest with you. Otherwise, look, Vegas thinks it's going to be Curry. He's the only player who is less than even odds. You know, he's at minus 250 or so, 255 before this show when I last checked. So,
John,
yeah,
all your bets that you talked about making, you know, third quarter, who wins a series. If Wiggins wins the MVP based off the spread you gave us or whatever the term is used.
Yeah, the odds.
Will you still earn more with that one pick than you will with all you've done previously?
It'll be close, but it'll be a lot. Because for these types of bets, you don't put crazy amounts down, right? Because they're so fickle. It's you know, like when you bet a score – you know what the score is after the game. You know who won the game, right? If you bet a spread, you know what the spread was because the game. MVP is one of those things that you got to look at performance. You got to project performance. But you also got to say, like, do the writers like this guy enough to give him an MVP? Do they have a beef with the guy? You know, so there's a lot of that going in there. Like, I liked Wiggins because if the Celtics – deserve to win a game, they should have won game five. If anyone on this planet told you, hey, we're holding Steph to less than, 20? And he's going to have the worst game. It'll be the first time in 233 games he's not going to hit a three.
Yeah.
If someone told you that before the game, would you have thought that the final score would be Warriors by 10? No. You would have said Boston is heading home to clinch the series in six, right? So I think the Celtics are probably demoralized at this point, probably.
Oh, big time.
And that is due largely to Wiggins because I think while Curry did an average job, he wasn't Superman in game five. Wiggins, even though his output is less than Curry's, like say, in terms of scoring – he was Superman for them in that one.
Right.
It wasn't just the scoring. It was like the way he scored. He was strong to the hoop, son. He just went – he drove with authority. He clamped down on Tatum. He was pulling down the boards. I don't know, Dennis, man. He could have been wearing cape in game five.
Yeah, right. Well, it's like I said before, when Wiggins said, I'm rebounding, that just made a big difference.
Absolutely. You know? Yep.
And if the Warriors win six, I don't think it's going to be enough for Wiggins. Like, he's not going to have enough time to sort of prove that he needs to be the MVP. It'll be close.
Dennis, what if Curry gets –
because you mentioned the story, right, with the writers. And you're right. Sometimes that's what it is. For Wiggins, it's sort of like the redemption, right? Number one pick. Everyone said, oh, no, he's not that good.
It's a great story, man. It's a great story to write.
I've been waiting to hear. Steph Curry has never won the Finals MVP. So, right now, there's more of the sentiment for Curry than there is for Wiggins. But Wiggins is climbing up there.
Okay, we got to let William talk. It looks like he's about
to. It's just everything you said, I agree with it. But I believe my take is on John's. It's like this: Wiggins has done everything, where Curry has been kind of not hit and miss. But he had a huge game four. I don't want to say disappeared, but got shut down a bit in game five, where Wiggins has been pretty steady. But I look at the redemption aspect. Writers love a redemption. And they can relate to the redemption story more than they can relate to the superstar. That said, I think they'll side with the superstar who's never won it. but I think Wiggins makes the better story, the overall number one pick, going, dealing with losing teams, bad coaches, underperforming based or not living up to expectations, better way to say it. And here he comes. I mean, this is better than the fish that saved Pittsburgh in my eyes in terms of the movie format, you know, and I'm rooting for Wiggins. I want, if Golden State wins it, I want Wiggins. Again, I said this, I want to say last podcast we were in as an underdog in life. I look at Wiggins and I can relate to that. You know, being that underdog. So I'm just hoping John is right. But I think the sports writers, they desperately want to give it to Curry. It reminds me of, I can't remember what year, but John, you probably remember for sure, when the coaches poll, the writers gave the national championship to Tom Osborne because he never won one when both he and Penn State had an undefeated season,
right,
and Penn State had the harder schedule. You know, so that's, you know, and trust me, I don't know about either one of you two, but I have worked with a lot of writers or reporters who do have these votes. I mean, they get those votes. And I said it publicly, most of them are dirtbags. They're not good people. They take sides based off bias. They don't like a player. That player could save their kid in a fire. You know, crawling 5 miles under the smoke to get to the kid, come back, and they're still going to write a hit piece about him. So these awards, I think, John, I don't know if you said it, but that's part of the equation too with on MVP and those type of awards, especially football now where the fans get involved. It's a popularity contest.
I think, and Dennis told his story about working with some of these NBA writers. It's I don't think the public at large appreciates that aspect of it, that, hey, man, if a player doesn't give you access, doesn't give you good quotes, is generally a sourpuss when you interview him, you'll find every reason imaginable not to vote for him for MVP. It's just human nature. If a person's if he's a hard ass, you're not going to vote for him, Dennis. And I think Wiggins, I like the redemption story, being the former number one who was given up on, basically called a bust. He goes from that to potential series MVP. Man, that's a great story, especially if, let's say it goes 6 or 7. Let's say Steph doesn't hit 30 points like he does his usual. Let's say he does 25, 26 a game the rest of the way. Wiggins double-doubles the rest of the way, like solid double-doubles, like 18s and 10s.
It has to be.
I don't know, man.
It has to go again 7 games.
7 games, right.
For 7 games, I think Wiggins has a really good shot. If it only goes 6, Curry's still, he's going to win it. You know, he's going to
Well,
win
I still
it.
Like
but
Wiggins.
Hold on, guys. A question. Yeah. If it goes 7 games, that means the Celtics win game 6. And right now, looking at it logically, if they win game 6, we're assuming Tatum is going to be able to get out of the funk he's in. And that kind of hurts Wiggins, so I don't understand that.
Tatum has been inconsistent, and when he's been inconsistent and the Celtics win, it's because Jaylen Brown has been, you know, on point. So the Celtics can win, you know, with Tatum having a bad game, because they have won games where he shot like 4 for 17. You know what I mean? So
in this series. Has that happened this series? I don't know.
I'm just talking in general, and it's been like that, like this postseason for sure. But it's just, that's just the way it is. Because the Celtics, they're more than just Tatum. You know what I mean? Just like the Warriors are more than just Curry. You know, so, you know, you still have Marcus Smart, who can score 20 plus at any point. Jaylen Brown, same thing. Al Horford, you saw him take over one game and was the main reason why they won. You know what I mean? So they can win without Jason Tatum having a great game.
Hey, man, and listen, Tatum cost me money in game 5 because I had him over 27.5, and he ended up with 27. I was texting Dennis, this guy better hit his free throws, and then he missed his last free throws, right? Didn't he tank both of them, Dennis, I think?
Yeah, the main thing was he airballed a 3.
Oh, that's
that was going to be the most embarrassing thing for a professional NBA player on television. The shooting that goes right under, because we all feel big. Yeah, I could have done that.
That was painful. That was painful to watch. Yeah.
So, guys, there is great news. The NBA has been hard hit with viewers over the last 5-10 years, and they've had their little peaks and valleys, but the numbers have either plateaued or slowly been like that. They're on an uptick here. 13.1 million viewers for last night's game. They're averaging 13 million viewers for last night's game. They're averaging 12.1 million a game this series. They're up 26%. So multiple choice. Why is this series up? And why is basketball up in the finals so much? Is it because of less politics in the game? People have checked out of the politics. Why enjoy basketball? It's a great series. Or is it that just there are more white people watching it because they think they're watching the old Boston team from the 80s? Which one is it, Dennis?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Just like how we all had COVID fatigue, you know, nowadays, we all had LeBron fatigue. LeBron was in the NBA Finals how many years in a row? You know what I mean? It's just like, again. But now, obviously, LeBron's not in it. I mean, you know, they didn't even make the playoffs, really. So you don't have LeBron in it, and you have Steph Curry coming back. You know, Steph Curry, everyone loves Steph Curry. So they're watching because of him, but they're also watching because, oh, damn, we got a young Celtics team that almost came out of nowhere. They're playing in the finals. Let me watch this. You know what I mean? So I think that's what it is. It's sort of like, yes, the Warriors have been there before, but there's, you know, we talked about a redemption story. Now here's like a whole redemption story with a team because the Warriors stunk because, you know, Steph Curry was hurt, Klay Thompson was hurt, Draymond Green was hurt. You know, they were so bad, they had a high draft pick, and that's how they were able to get Jonathan Kuminga. You know, and then you have a young upstart Boston Celtics team. And, you know, let's remember, it's Boston and San Francisco. High media markets, you know what I mean? So that plays into it as well. I think it's just awesome because it's been an exciting series, you know? So, you know, especially with the Celtics, they've been going to game seven, you know, in the two rounds before this one. So it's like, oh, yeah, this is a fun team to watch.
I agree with you. I think also I agree with everything you said. People forget San Francisco and Boston being media markets. But I also think that the Celtics are one of those teams that, especially in urban areas, if they're everybody's second favorite team. Like even in New York, right? If you're not a Knicks fan or a Nets fan, your second favorite team probably is the Celtics, going back to the Larry Bird days even, right? So I think for a lot of urban areas, you have that dynamic with Boston. It's kind of weird. Like, okay, if I'm not rooting for my home team, then number two on the list might be the Celtics for a lot of the geographic nation, wouldn't you say? So I think that plays into it, but then also for every other factor you guys mentioned. It's been an exciting series. There is that old versus young. Is it the changing of the guard? It's two different styles of basketball on the surface. One is more hard-nosed. The other one is not showtime, but it's more movement. It's more, you know, more the battle of the three-point. So I think that plays into it as well, but I do think it has a lot to do with Boston being in it. I think, you know, Boston just as a team, as a franchise.
Yeah. One point, though, Dennis, and you brought it up, there's no – LeBron. LeBron's also a highly polarized political figure now. He's as hated as he is loved by basketball people. I don't think he would have drawn in the people that the Celtics are drawing in now. What I'm saying is taking LeBron out of the equation takes the reason for people not to watch it. And they go, oh, I'm going to watch it this time. It's the Celtics also. The Celtics have that tradition. I got a quick story here because it's anecdotal, but it's something a lot of us who are love sports notice. So, for example, I've gone to easily 20-some-odd countries in the military. I've met thousands of people, worked with hundreds. And for football, for example, the Packers and the Browns had the greatest amount of fans, period, which was shocking because at the time the Packers really were still – they had just gotten Favre. They were that era, you know. And in basketball, it was always the Lakers and the Celtics. You know, those were the two dynasties there that were that even the nonchalant. So I think no Lakers this go around. But with Celtics, it brings back the memories of that dynasty. And that dynasty, if you think about it, hits all age groups, meaning our grandparents with the older Celtics the people our age with the Bird Celtics, and now they may be generating a new cycle of fans all over the country with this series. But I find that funny for football because the Packers and Browns are just the Browns are perennial losers, the Lakers and Celtics. It was something, and we would talk about that. We're like, damn, yeah. And that's why most people always feel sports draws people together from various diverse backgrounds. And obviously that's changed a bit, though. But, yeah, it's great news for the series. Quick prop question, two of them for you, John, real quick. 16 turnovers, I guess, I don't know what the term is, over under for it. What are you going to tell people to pick? They're going to surpass 16 turnovers the Celtics will tomorrow or in game six, or will they stay under?
Well, I haven't done the – honestly, I haven't done the analysis on it. My gut feeling, this is just the feeling, is they're going to hit – they're going to go over 16 turnovers.
What about you, Senor Velasco?
I would say, yeah, they're going to go over that as well.
Gotcha. And the MVP, your gut, who wins it, Big John?
More likely than not, it'll be Steph Curry. I'm holding out hope that Wiggins comes through.
And Senor Velasco, I would take you would agree with that.
Yeah, definitely. If it's in six games, if the Dubs win, definitely Curry. If the Dubs win in seven games, I think Wiggins might take it.
You know, that's the type of answer I give. I always like to give what I expect, but here's your asterisk. But, you know, we also sound like politicians when we answer like that.
No, you don't want me in office. I'm too dumb. I guess I might be perfect.
I will refrain from – so you're a Democrat?
I'm independent.
I'm kidding. John, any final comments or words of wisdom?
Yeah, don't eat the yellow snow.
There you go. Everyone, you have been listening to Points on the Board. Don't forget to visit sportsgrumblings.com. We've got a whole slew of podcasts. We've got the big questions with Big John. He's just now released his interview with a Playboy model. Still looking as beautiful as ever, but she's more than just a model. Yep. Quite a life story she talks about with John. Dennis, our resident analyst here, is always giving us good questions. Dennis, what's your website that they can hit up?
Hit up Hartman in Hollywood because that's active right now.
There you go. Dennis is a good guy, people. Hit him up. He knows a lot. One of the unheralded analysts in this game. And Dennis and John, it was great to have you guys on once again. And we will talk soon. Good night, everybody.